listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Well, despite successive regimes of sanctions against Russia by the United States, a lot of business is still being done between Russia and the EU. A frank discussion of some of that took place in Moscow on Tuesday. The Association of European Businesses in Russia, which represents more than 500 companies and banks of member states in the EU, held a press conference with Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. We bring you a sample of some of the fare that was offered up in that discussion.
The automotive industry this year is fortunately very much increasing, more than 70% up this year. It's one of the examples of the prosperity we are feeling in this country for 2017. We are all here together, actually, representing European industry in Russia. And since that's more than 3 years, actually, we are suffering from the economic situation related to low oil price and weakening of the ruble, but also directly or indirectly and very different sectors from the sanctions and counter sanctions. I think we agree here that this, yes, there is a political situation which have been reason for the sanctions, but on the other side, we are looking for, and I think Europe and Russia, and of course, the members of the AIB are finding a way to reduce sanctions or limit sanctions or stop sanctions. The two things have been said by, we had this morning meeting with the your ambassadors, and you mentioned that today also economic or business people should also think political. You said the smart and powerful party should go ahead. We in business, when maybe it's pragmatic, but Just let me ask the question. When we are trying to work out something in negotiation for business success, and we do this for some time, yes, everybody has his principle and his standpoint, but when it comes to a situation that nothing goes really forward, isn't it a smart and powerful position to find then a compromise? And we have the feeling that the compromise in the negotiation, and we have the feeling that speaking with you, representatives, that I think it's time. It's time there for non-monolithic statements of principles from all sides, but finding a solution. What could be, my question now, and I think everybody is prepared for that, what could be a smart move of a powerful Russia in this negotiation? That's my first question. And second, fully different, because we're really only waiting for us. Maybe you can give us some hope today that in independently from the economic and natural prosperous, that there is a way in this direction, which of course has to be linked to any little move or any move in the Minsk agreement. And the second question is, we are lobbying also, AB is lobbying between Eurasian, Russian and economic authorities, Eurasian Economic Union has been mentioned today. We are in our mission to Brussels also lobbied for this union. How you see the future of this union, how you see the development of this union, and how you see the partnership between EU and the Eurasian Economic Union.
Thank you very much.
Well, actually, I touched upon both these subjects, and I understand that you're dissatisfied and even discouraged by the fact that our relations are at a very low level, not where they should be, considering the potential that Russia and the EU have together, and considering the potential of the Eurasian cooperation project. But in your question, you said what kind of smart move we can make, and you answered your own question. You said that we have to implement the Minsk Accords. Let me tell you a very short story. When the Minsk Accords were being agreed, it took us 17 hours. And eventually, we came up with this package of measures approved by the UN Security Council unanimously without any changes, including the fact that it was signed. The Minsk package of measures was signed by the leaders of two unrecognized republics, Lugansk and Donetsk, Zakharchenko and Plotnitsky. And Saakashvili, I'm sorry.
Well,
he's generally Ukrainian guy now. No, Poroshenko, not Saakashvili. Poroshenko insisted that these two people should come to Minsk in person and sign this document, and now he says that they should not be allowed anywhere near the negotiating table. They should not be involved in implementing these accords. And Kurt Volker says that they have no business being there. They only want to talk to people they can work with. And when it became clear that President Poroshenko would sabotage the Minsk Accords because he was afraid of the radicals who accused him of treason, and he was unable to use his reputation to work together with the European Union, which supported him, with the United States, with the United Nations Security Council, he failed to insist on implementing the Minsk agreements. He did not have courage to oppose the extremists. He lacked character. From that point on, all Normandy 4 meetings were about, well, how do we implement the Minsk Accords? And President Putin would say, well, it's very clear. It says clearly here that we should agree on the special status, we should agree on the election bill, and it never worked out. And then Poroshenko started saying that the special status law should not be adopted before an election takes place, because he, as the Ukrainian president, before he adopts a law on the special status of Donbass, he should know who will be the leader of Donbass. In other words, if they elect somebody he likes, he will provide the territory with a special status. But actually, if they elect somebody he likes, he will forget all about the special status. So this kind of futuristic discussion went on for a very long time until Vice Chancellor and Foreign Minister and currently President of Germany, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, offered his own formula, and it's known now as the Steinmeier formula, that the special status bill should be adopted, and it would preliminarily go into effect on the first day of the election and will finally come into effect after the EU circulates its report on monitoring the election. It was a year since the time, nothing happened. This formula did not become a legally binding. It was never put on paper. So when we asked what's the problem, Poroshenko said, if the final EU report says that the election was undemocratic and unfair, and it took them a year to come up with that. Then President Putin said, okay, so let's say that the law goes into effect on a preliminary basis on the first day of the election, and then it finally comes into effect when the EU circulates the final report saying that this election was fair and met all EU criteria. This was the second concession we made, even though the Minsk Accords say nothing like that. They just say that the law should be adopted before the election so that people, when they vote, know what kind of powers the people they vote for will have. And the third concession, the suggestion to arm OSCE monitors was unacceptable for the EU, and now we are now we are stuck in the UN Security Council. We proposed our resolution, and on one hand, they are happy to discuss it, and yet they don't discuss it. And then Ukraine and the United States say there should be a different resolution, and they don't make any offers. If they only needed an excuse to abandon their Russophobic policies, they had plenty of excuses to do that. You know, recently somebody said that, and I don't want to sound anti-American, we just state the obvious. The U.S. wants to preserve its dominating position in political, economic, and military affairs. I think nobody doubts that. They're the greatest power in the world, but they use dirty tricks in securing these goals, and I've given you plenty of examples earlier today. But as we observe the situation in Europe, the mainstream, what they call mainstream in recent years, it seems like the U.S. succeeded in making sure that any negative events in the EU, almost any negative event, any kind of protest against policies pursued by other governments, bankruptcies of some companies, and even man-made disasters, you can blame everything on Russia. Blame everything on evil Russians and claim that we use information space. They even say that we meddle in all elections and even manipulate the environment, create floods, like there was a flood yesterday, terrible floods in Europe. Now, by the way, speaking of elections, with the United States, with Germany, with the UK, because they accused us of staging Brexit. They accused us of meddling in French election, and the French president even then the two Russian media organizations, Russia Today and Sputnik, from his pool, and now they are being forced to register as foreign agents in the U.S. Sweden says that they're confident that Russia is going to meddle in their elections. I already mentioned South Africa, and nobody has ever provided any hard facts, any evidence. But speaking of Germany, we do have a fact that the telephone of Chancellor Merkel was bugged by U.S. intelligence services, and BND or other intelligence services in Germany, they did nothing about that. They just claim, accuse Russia of doing all sorts of things, but we can't provide you with evidence because it's classified. Well, you know, all those excuses, classified information, that's very interesting, you know. You know, you remember the Litvinenko case? This person died tragically in London. There was an investigation. We insisted that the investigation should be public. They kept it behind closed doors with involving intelligence services. It's officially called public, but in reality it's closed, and nobody really knows what kind of charges were brought and what kind of facts were offered. Then there was the MH17 incident over Ukraine. Again, the investigation was done behind closed doors. The evidence provided by Russia was not taken into consideration. A couple years ago, they wanted to set up a tribunal. We said, first, we need to complete the investigation. The investigation has never been concluded. They extended it for another year. We saw no facts, not a single fact yet. Yet they continue accusing Russia. And when we ask them why we can't see evidence, they say it's classified. Just like our U.S. partners told me, when we ask them where is the evidence of our meddling in your election, they say we do have evidence, but it's classified. The investigation has been going on for 9 months and we haven't seen a single fact. In the U.S. political culture, leaks are something that happens every day. If there were at least a single hard fact, it would have been leaked a long time ago. There are so many people involved in congressional hearings, and in the special counsel's work. So when they say it's classified, it sounds ridiculous for people that bring such serious charges against us. So once again, I would like to say that and this is what I started with when I was answering another question. They want us to give them an excuse so they can lift sanctions. They can say, okay, Russians have done something good, so let's go ahead and lift sanctions. We're doing what we're doing. I gave you some examples of us being very constructive, like with implementing the Minsk Accords. So if you're looking for an excuse, here's an excuse for you. And we did not offer this excuse to ask you to lift sanctions, ask your governments, I'm sorry, not you personally. It's just because we want to implement the Minsk Accords. And I have no doubt that our partners in the Normandy 4 format, Germany and France, they're involved in this work on a regular basis. I know that they understand perfectly well who it is that blocks the implementation of the Minsk Accords. Let me just give you one example. A year ago, we have agreed to create de-escalation zones along the disengagement line, and as a pilot project, we identified two areas. Two areas, heavy weapons have been pulled back, and then the third area, proved by everybody, was called Luganska. And at this particular area, it was really difficult to pull back heavy weapons because the Ukrainians said we can't do that because clashes continue. And then they made a demand. They said they would be willing to pull back heavy weapons as long as there is 1 week of complete silence. And since that time, and you can look this up, you can contact the OSCE mission about this. The OSCE mission said there were eight times when there was a complete week of silence. And every time after the OSCE reported a complete week of silence and suggested starting pulling back heavy weapons, Ukraine would say, this is your statistic. And we heard 100 shots, 100 rounds being fired, and this would be the end of it. So on November 4th, they will make another attempt. This would be the ninth week of complete silence when they want to start pulling back heavy weapons. And I would prefer to be mistaken, but I think Ukraine will once again offer its own statistics. So, this is again an excuse. You're looking for a positive excuse from our side, and I gave you some examples. And this is a negative excuse to insist on the people in Kyiv who abuse the goodwill of Berlin, Paris, and Washington and other Western capitals. They should demand that they stop playing those games and finally deliver on their promises. You know it takes two to tango. Okay, let's take two more questions.
Matt Franchek.
Yeah. Art Franchek, American Institute of Business and Economics. Mr. Lavrov, I'll be very short. Okay. At Valdai, you indicated that there was his anti-Russia hysteria, and you also just indicated it just now. My question simply is, what can we as the business community do to work with you to fight against this hysteria that we know is not fact-based?
You know, business people know themselves what serves their interests, so if businesses just let their position known to our leadership and your leadership, and if your position is that a business needs a different kind of atmosphere, I think this would be the right thing to do. Frankly, I'm not an optimist. I don't think political leaders will listen to business too much. I know and I've seen, including the latest meeting between President Putin and President Nazarbayev with a German businessman in Sochi. Just like French businessmen, just like Italians, all those companies stayed on the Russian market, and we saw how German businessmen, like Italian businessmen, French and Austrian businessmen, they're all interested in keeping politics away from the economy. But I also remember there was a period when the West first, the EU, following the US, imposed sanctions after Crimea, after Donbass. That's when in Germany I read all those debates. The businessmen encouraged the government to keep the economy and the politics separately. And this is something we also mentioned earlier today, but the chancellor said, at least this is what the media reported, she said that in this particular case, politics should dominate the economy. So this was a deliberate sacrifice of economic interests. So there is not much I can say on this issue.
Истерия, да?
You talk about hysteria.
Истерия. Вот этот прокурор Мюллер.
You know, the special counsel Mueller in Washington made the first results of his work public. He worked for a number of months, and now they accuse two former campaign staffers of Trump for something they did for President Yanukovych. They were looking for a Russian hand. I just ask, please don't show this, don't publish this, I don't want to get involved in this, but off the record, I'm going to say this. What about the current Ukrainian leadership, how they paid for the Clinton campaign. We are all aware of that as well. So you can always find an excuse, to ruin things for others. And you can always find an excuse to normalize relations. It's all up to you. Okay, it all depends on what you want to do.
Долгожданный вопрос, простой вопрос, руководитель по человеческим
ресурсам. Вы недавно говорили, мне сотрудники
передали, что вы своих не бросаете. Мы сейчас помогаем 700 русским снова найти работу, которые были уволены из американского посольства. И среди них отличные таланты, я лично убедился, снова
с ним встретился.
И я им говорил, что вы очень хорошо подходите именно в
you would work very well at the foreign ministry and other government agencies, so we can offer this person.
И, к сожалению, они нам говорят, им говорят, что есть некий неофициальный черный список, их не рассматривают. И как мы пытаемся, мы туда не можем устроить.
So we were never able to get them to work there.
I apologize, blacklist
for them to be hired where? Russian organizations, government organizations, but of course you will never see any written evidence, but many of them have been to many. They can get a job with the private companies, but they can't get a job with the government agencies.
Short, please.
Is there anything you can do to help those people? You know, I'm not really an expert on
внутреннем праве США из ведущих западных стран,
and Western law.
Могу
but I can imagine
когда,
a situation where, say, there is a person working at the Russian embassy in Washington, a U.S. citizen working for a Russian embassy, and I'm not talking about the technical employee, because in this particular case with the U.S. embassy in Moscow, even though those people officially were technical staff, but according to the Vienna Convention, they performed functions that diplomatic workers should do. They traveled through the country, they had meetings, they surveyed public opinion. This is something that diplomats do. But we never objected to that, except for a few small cases. But can you imagine that you have several hundred U.S. citizens working in the Russian consulate in San Francisco, which is now shut down by the FBI, by the security service, in such an insolent, boorish manner? They went through our archives.
Представьте себе,
can you imagine
вот эти американские граждане,
those U.S. citizens working at this consulate general, they're now fired. And let's say they want to get a job with the U.S. government. Do you think they would be hired straight away? I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I think every bureaucracy should operate based on its own rules. There are regulations in European countries about people who have relatives abroad, married a foreigner, how they are treated. So let's not get into these matters. If they're skilled professionals, and I believe so, I don't think the Americans would hire just anybody. I'm pretty confident they should be able to get a decent job. They don't need to work for the Russian government necessarily. We have a lot of private companies, and there is a lot of demand on the market for skilled professionals. And as regards the situation in general, we're not happy about it either. We had to take this step to bring about parity in the number of diplomats and employees in general in diplomatic missions of Russia in the U.S. and the U.S. in Russia. and we made a very serious concession to the U.S. They have a serious advantage because we've included Russian diplomats working in the U.N. mission, in Russia's mission to the U.N., we included 170 diplomats working at the Russian embassy to the UN in the number of our staff in the US, and they should not be included. They have nothing to do with this parity between Russia and the US. They are protected by a special agreement between the US and the UN, because the U.S. is a host country to the United Nations, and if we are talking about parity, we should never have included them in this number, but we kept them there, hoping that this would help us somehow stop this crazy spiral launched by the Nobel Peace Prize winner last year. And it's deplorable that this passion of Obama, his desire to subvert U.S.-Russia relations had such a great momentum. It was supported by many Democrats and many Republicans, and they do this purely to achieve their internal political goals, to score some political goals in their
political struggle within the U.S.
And unfortunately, U.S. President Donald Trump, even though he has been saying that he wants to improve ties with Russia, hasn't been able to do so. No, he says this would benefit the U.S., Russia, and the rest of the world. Still, I hope that serious observers understand how it all started, and I really hope that everybody understands the laws of diplomacy,
where
everything is based on mutuality. And I hope if you compare the actions taken by the United States, starting with the Obama administration and later with Donald Trump, who had to go along and follow over the flow, and if you compare their actions to what we did in response, you will see that we were as reserved as possible, even though we had to follow some basic diplomatic principles.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. With the indictment of Paul Manafort and his associate, the special investigation to what is called Russiagate has yielded some results. It has been long thought Manafort and others may have committed financial transgressions. Essentially, this is about following the money. But still, there's no Russia connection. Crosstalking indictments, I'm joined by my guest, Ray McGovern in Washington. He is a former CIA analyst and co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Also in Washington, we have Brian Pruitt. He is a contributor at Red State. And in Purcellville, we cross to Ned Ryan. He is founder and CEO of American Majority. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Ray, let me go to you first in Washington. Okay, the special prosecutor Mueller has come out with his first indictments. Is this his best and last indictments, or is this going to be a very long path? Because we also have this young man, George Papadopoulos, very low on the food chain there. Maybe that is the intention, to have very high and very low at the same time and see how we can fill it up in the middle, or is this just a one-time off? Go ahead, Ray.
Well, Bob Mueller, I'd have to say right out, is a fraud.
Okay.
He's going after the little people to try to turn them, to try to get them to squeal on the others. And people don't realize that this this reputation as being an honorable man, which is always bruited about in the New York Times, Washington Post, and so forth, he's an honorable man only in the sense that Mark Antony used this, the word in Julius Caesar by Shakespeare. I mean, he covered up 9/11. As U.S. attorney in Boston, he covered up murders by some of the Boston FBI agents. He covered up torture. He covered up illegal surveillance. And last but not least, when James Comey, his best friend, so to speak, said that, when he leaked to the New York Times that Trump had told him bad things about stopping the investigation on Mike Flynn, what did Comey do? He leaked to the New York Times, and when he was asked, why did you leak that to the New York Times? He said, well, because I wanted a special counsel appointed, and I prayed, he didn't say this, but I prayed that it could be my best friend, Bob Mueller. Okay.
Yes. So, well, I'm sure Comey said, "Oh Lordy." Okay. Let me go to Ned here. And of course, we had Jeff Sessions that had recused himself. Okay. So that was, we have Rosenstein and we have Mueller, very good friends as well. Okay. We're kind of going to the end. I wanted to end on these points here about, will we ever get a real investigation, considering all of these conflicts of interest here. But Ned, I thought it was very telling, Paul Manafort. I don't think anybody was really surprised about the indictments against him. It's really,
no.
I wasn't surprised at all. It was only a matter of time. And considering his relationship with Ukraine, let me stress here, this is Ukraine gate right now at this point in time, gentlemen, okay? Again, kind of the same question that I had for Ray. I mean, does he have a pecking order here? Because Ray pointed out, there's going to be pressure for people to flip on others. My worry is that maybe there isn't anything to flip on. That's going to be interesting here. Go ahead, Ned.
No, Peter, I've made this very point on Twitter that if Mueller's attempt is to squeeze Manafort to get him to flip on what?
Yeah.
Fairy tale? And I've been saying this on TV for months and months that the Trump-Russia collusion is a fairy tale. And I think one of the biggest hoaxes that the American left and the mainstream media have tried to pull over on the American people. But I want to go back and clarify a few things about what this whole situation is with Manafort. This is an ongoing FBI investigation that was happening years before Mueller showed up, potentially 3.5 years ago is when it started. This is dealing with stuff that people like myself that have been involved in politics, we already knew Paul Manafort was sleazy. The only thing it appears Trump is guilty of is actually hiring Manafort to be on his campaign.
I agree.
But Peter, there's two things that people need to be aware of. What we're dealing with are two basic issues in regards to the 12 counts against Manafort. $75 million that he and his business partner attempted to hide from U.S. authorities in their work with the Ukraine while acting as unregistered foreign agents. So there's two issues that you're dealing with here. The foreign bank account reports and the Foreign Agent Registration Act. That's, I think, seven of the counts that are against him. This has nothing to do with the Trump 2016 campaign. And again, if they're attempting to twist and to pressure Manafort, again, I would say, go back to my earlier point, I'm not really sure there's anything to flip on. And to tie back into a Shakespeare analogy, I really do think this is much ado about nothing.
Brian, let me go to you, because one of the interesting things that's been coming out over the last few days is the relationship that Manafort had with the Podesta brothers and their lobbying efforts in Washington, D.C. It seems like all roads lead to Ukraine. And I'll tell you, gentlemen, I've been to Ukraine many, many times. It is one of the most amazingly corrupt places in the world, okay? And a lot of sleazy people like business there because they can hide their money here. Brian, there are a lot of interesting periphery things here, but what Mueller is supposed to be doing is, at least, in theory, is this collusion theory that Trump had with Russia. We still, after all these months, we still don't have anything remotely close to that. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, I think the lessons we need to learn are, one, that the Trump vetting process was absolutely non-existent, that they would allow somebody like Manafort that everybody knew had these issues to become the campaign chairman.
Agreed.
So self-inflicted wounds there. are, you know, completely unnecessary. The second thing that we learned is that Mueller is going to do the easy things first, and then sort of whether it goes to the middle of the chain or whether it goes up the chain, the harder cases to make are going to come later. The thing I would pay attention to is to see whether we have a lull in activity from the special prosecutor's office, or whether we start getting more information. For instance, if he moves against Michael Flynn quickly right. in the next couple news cycles, that's going to be, I think, the most important thing to keep our radar.
I'm glad you brought up Flynn. Okay, let me go back to Ray here now. I think the reason why they didn't go to Flynn first because it's not sexy enough. It has nothing to do with Russia. It has something to do with Turkey. That would take the air out of the room for these people here. They'll probably get Flynn, you know, or Friday night when they're taking out the trash, okay, because it isn't going to add to their narrative, okay? You know, Ray, I mean, what I think is more important, and I don't want to go down any kind of rabbit hole here, but, you know, this Podesta Brothers, the Fusion GPS, I mean, you know, there's real collusion there. There's money exchange back and forth, okay? These, you know, meetings with a Russian lawyer, a young kid, probably in a sting operation, you know, this doesn't really add much texture to it. But Fusion GPS, $10 million goes missing. Nobody knows how it was spent. I mean, I can't understand why a special prosecutor wouldn't be interested in that. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, we know how it was spent. It was spent on research.
Research.
So-called research by this clown from MI6, retired, Steele. Now, you're quite right, Peter. That money was paid to Russian informants to serve up all kinds of manufactured dirt that was presented to President-elect Trump on the 6th of January of this year. Now, how was it presented? Well, James Comey has sent his NSA and CIA counterparts away, and in the best tradition of J. Edgar Hoover, he said, "Now, Mr. President, Mr. President-elect, you should know. Now, we don't know how reliable this is, but did you really sleep in the bed of, you know? Now, you want to know why Trump fired Comey? He said, because it was this Russia thing. And the Russia thing has to do with Comey and his very traditional but very extracurricular raising of this scurrilous stuff that is not supported by any real intelligence.
Let me go to Ed here. Ed, I think this is really interesting because I think this is one of the things that the mainstream media purposely doesn't understand or deflects away from it. When Trump said when he fired Comey, he said it had to do with the Russia investigation. And I'm going to echo what Ray had to say here. I think Trump believed that Comey thought it was real. And Trump knows it's a fake dossier.
That's
and
right.
This is what he was worried about. He said, you actually believe this piece of fiction? Okay, that's why. No one in Western media can connect the simplest dots. Go ahead, Ned. Go ahead.
That's right. No, Fusion GPS is not an opposition research firm. They are a misinformation firm.
Yes, please.
And I think the thing that's interesting, Peter, is let's just not stop with James Comey. I think James Clapper and John Brennan also have to be brought into this conversation. There's one of two things that they did. Either they are terrible intelligence officers and not understanding this dossier was completely fake and unverified, or two, even worse, they use it as a thin disguise and justification to spy on Trump and his associates. Yeah. And I'm afraid, Peter, it was option number two. They knew exactly what they were doing. They were using this in many ways as a false pretense to get FISA warrants, etc. The other thing, though, that I want to talk about is if we're going to be talking about Manafort and the Ukraine, why are we not talking about the DNC and the Ukraine? As
also,
Politico reported at the beginning of this year, there are strong connections and lead us to believe that
Ned,
there was collusion between the DNC and the
you
Ukraine.
You just want to spoil the story by bringing up evidence. You know, this is what they don't want. That's why you get to hear it here, okay? These are facts,
Peter,
okay? To what degree that they played
right.
a role
and
in
I
this?
Think,
go ahead. Go ahead before we go to the break. Ned, go ahead.
But I really want to throw in this. As in a unified theory of the executive branch, the White House can inform DOJ, Rosenstein, to actually expand Mueller's investigation to include, was there collusion between the DNC and the Ukraine? Why was Fusion GPS involved in this? Who was paying them? Who else was paying them? He can expand this probe. And also, I'd like to understand
What on earth was Hillary Clinton doing with the Clinton Foundation while she was Secretary of State? If they will expand the probe, I think this could lead to some very interesting places, Peter.
Well, I think that they don't want to go to these interesting places here. Gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we will continue our discussion on what's called Russiagate. Okay, Brian, one of the things I find really quite remarkable is that if you read the book Shattered about the Clinton campaign, which I suggest people look at it, it's very good. It's actually an audiobook on YouTube if you want to listen to it. And they claim that, you know, after their defeat in November, they hatched this within 24 hours, get to blame the Russians on this one and Comey. Okay. Do you think they kind of regret that now? Because the more you look around, I mean, you know, one of the Podesta brothers had to quit his own lobbying firm out of this. Do you think they planned that far ahead, how this thing could ricochet around? Because essentially it's follow the money. That's what you can actually prove is transactions, maybe recording somebody, surveilling someone. But basically it's financial transactions. And the Podesta brothers working with Manafort and other people, those kinds of things do exist. I have to wonder on that defeat night if they had ever anticipated that Democrats and their lobbyists and their donors could be pulled into this vortex. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, the lobbying and the exchange of money, it's not a partisan issue. It doesn't happen just in Republican circles or Democratic circles. Podesta has his own problems. But I think this going back to the Clintons is kind of trying to beat a dead horse. What we need to do is focus, or what the special prosecutor should do is not pay attention to Hillary Clinton, who lost the election. They need to focus on wrapping this investigation up as quickly as possible so the American people can move on. The other thing that you need to keep an eye on is how close this gets to the Trump family. If there will ever, I believe it will be a complete game changer if there is anything revealed about the Trump family, because we obviously know President Trump runs the White House sort of like a family business, and if there were to be any sort of Don Jr. revelations or Jared Kushner revelations to come from this investigation, I believe we're looking at a completely different political landscape.
Ned, you are disagreeing. Jump in.
I am disagreeing. Brian, I think one of the things I've heard this argument, well, Hillary Clinton lost, we should leave her alone. No, either the law is the law or it's not. And I think people have said, well, if you go and prosecute a former presidential candidate, isn't that banana republic? I would actually argue it's banana republic to not. We are either going to accept the fact that the law is king. It's one of our founding principles that all stand equal before the law. And if there appears to be evidence and appears to be strong enough evidence that we should pursue it, if we had a major presidential candidate who used to be the Secretary of State playing games with our national security and doing a lot of other interesting things that I think call into question what was she actually doing and what motivated her, I think we need to go put that to rest and understand what was actually going on.
Okay, so Ned,
I strongly disagree with that.
Let me go to Ray here. I mean, to kind of echo with what Ned just said there, I mean, the Clinton machine, it continues to inject itself into this, okay? And of course, MSNBC and CNN, they're carrying, I mean, she lost, but they're still carrying on, you know, they're with her to this day, okay? Go ahead, Ray.
Well, yeah, Peter, there's a PTSD here in Washington. I call it the HWHW virus. Hillary would have won. Now, it couldn't possibly be because Hillary was a terrible candidate who nobody trusted. No, it has to be some sort of external factor, and so it's the Russians. Now, I would correct the impression that this all began around the election time. This began as soon as Julian Assange announced on June 12th of last year that he had, quote, emails relating to Hillary Clinton and that he was about to publish them. That's when it started. 3 days later, CrowdStrike, okay, right, a disreputable cyber thing working for the DNC, in cooperation, I believe, not only with the DNC, but with the CIA and the FBI, constructed this entity called Guccifer II, right, who spilled the beans on Russian hacking. Now, we know from the metadata that has been cited that, number one, It was done in the Eastern time zone, not Vladivostok, but Washington and New York. And number two, it was not hacked. This one July 5 event, it was leaked into a thumb drive. We know that because the velocity, the speed with which it was downloaded or copied, really is the right word, the speed with which it was copied far exceeded any physical capability of the internet at the time. Now that's physics, and physics doesn't lie. So we know that's when it started. It was immediately used to disguise, to deflect attention from what was in those Hillary Clinton emails and the DNC emails. And then later, when she lost, then it was very convenient to blame the Russians. And by the way, create the kind of tension with Russia, which is now very dangerous, but which these people seem blithely ignorant of how dangerous it is.
You know, Ned, you know, Ray brought this up, and Veeps looked at it. You can see a lot of articles that are at consortiumnews.com, which I think is one of the best things out there today. I mean, article after article, Robert Perry, you know, he's a real hero of journalism, and there's so few heroes now. It talked about what Ray just said there, you know, looking at evidence, looking at facts, but you still can go on CNN. Well, 17 intelligence agencies said, but no, that has already been debunked. It's been debunked for months, but you still hear it. It's like hit F1 on your computer and they regurgitate it. And all I hear, I have to wonder if all these pundits get together at breakfast in the morning and have a cup of coffee and they recite what they're going to say in unison, because you hear the same thing over and over again. That's not even based on facts. Go ahead, Ned.
This is one of the things that I think has been called into question, especially this year, but it's been going on for a while, about what is the role of the press. I'm all for a free press, Peter. I'm also for an honest press. And what I really want to see them admit to is, you know what? You're not Moses coming down from Mount Sinai with God's truth. You're not paragons of truth and rightness. You're just another guy with an opinion, with a different worldview, with a different value set, driving a specific narrative. Be honest about who you are. And as Steve Bannon said at the beginning of the year, they are the opposition party, and the colors, the disguise has come off. They have really shown their true colors this year. But you know what, Peter? The American people have figured it out, and I've used this fact before. In 1976, according to a Gallup poll, the American people viewed the media in America at a 72% a rating of trustworthiness. You know what it was in 2016? It had dropped to 32%, 40 points in 40 years.
You know, because
the American people are really starting to understand the media complex for what it is.
There's no Walter Cronkite, unfortunately, today. You know, Brian, one of the things I find really remarkable, if I watch a lot of media because that's what I'm supposed to do, and I watch Fox and I look at MSNBC, you would think they're talking about different countries. You think about their, you know, you never, the Podesta thing, Fusion GPS, MSNBC is oblivious to these things. And then you look at Fox and you see a very different narrative, and it's up for the viewer to decide. But I will tell you, a lot of people do watch Fox. And when you consider how the liberal mainstream media continues this witch hunt against Trump, and I'm indifferent to Trump. I'm agnostic, okay? But I see institutions being destroyed. And I don't think the people in power that appointed the special counsel, I don't think they have legitimacy in the eyes of the American people to make these decisions about getting rid of a president, because that's essentially what they're trying to do. Go ahead, Brian.
I disagree with you on that. I think they're trying to follow the facts of the case. Let's not forget that, again, this was another self-inflicted wound. The president didn't have to fire Comey. He chose to fire Comey, which was the reason we have Mueller now. We really have to keep, I know we like talking about the media as the boogeyman in the room, but these problems are not creations of the media. The Paul Manafort's money problems, or his legal problems now, are entirely of his own creation.
Let's keep that in mind. That's
a fair point. That's exactly right. That has nothing to do with the campaign. And to agree with what you said there.
Well, Papadopoulos does. Let's keep in mind self-inflicted
wounds. I agree with you. Okay, completely. We see it all the time. But that's not an impeachable offense. Agreed?
Certainly not. Certainly not. And I don't think former Director Mueller has used the word impeachment. I don't believe he's used any sort of, okay. He's trying to
agree.
Do an investigation.
I agree.
And it's the political. So the president has two problems. His people have legal problems. The president has a political problem. Those are two very, very different things. And we need to pay attention. I think if there's one thing the press needs to do more of, it's cover the personal legal problems less and focus on the political problem that the president has because of all these investigations.
Ray, we're rapidly running out of time. Ray, you want to jump in there? Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that unlike you, Peter, I am not agnostic about Mr. Trump. He should be impeached, pure and simple. I have 9 grandchildren. They're not going to have clean air to breathe. They're not going to have clean water to drink.
I see your point.
He exited the Paris Accord. There's plenty of evidence to impeach this guy, but not on trumped up evidence, pardon the pun,
seven years from now.
Russia, right?
Okay, yeah,
it doesn't help to impeach somebody on a lie.
Peter?
Yeah. Well, okay, Ned, you know, I can take on board very easily what Ray had to say there. But at the same time, there are laws, there are institutions, and just because you don't like the sitting president, don't throw it all away, okay? That's what I say. You don't like him? Vote him out.
Right.
Vote him out, okay? Let the process work.
And he won't be. He'll be reelected.
Well,
Peter.
You know, I'm
the thing that I want to make
Ned,
point of.
Ned, I'm from the Midwest. I agree with you. If he can grow the economy, he will be reelected. Go ahead, Ned. Last 30 seconds.
Absolutely. No, I think you'll see a second term of Trump, and I'm looking forward to being on the front row of when President Mike Pence is inaugurated in January of 2025. I don't think people understand the seismic shift that is taking place in America because they're stuck in the D.C. and New York City bubble. Get out a little bit more and talk to real people, and they'll understand things have completely changed here.
Okay, well, you know, gentlemen, one thing is for sure, with the characters in play, including the media, I don't see the swamp being drained anytime soon. Okay, gentlemen, we've run out of time. Many thanks to my guests in Washington and in Percival, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.